Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another fantastic episode of the Inside Acting Radio Show. I'm your host, William Powell, the undisputed king of DC media. Today, I'm welcoming back to the show Mr. Eric Braden, the star of The Young and the Restless, Titanic, Rat Patrol, and Colossus, The Forbin Project, among many other TV shows and movies. He's back here to talk about the 2012 presidential election, and I'm just waiting for him to join us, and I see that he has, so let me bring him in. Eric, how the hell are you?
I'm going to put Eric on. I forget, is this live or taped?
Oh, it's live.
It's live.
All right.
Hello, William.
Eric, how the hell are you, man?
How the hell are you, boy?
Fantastic.
What's going on?
Okay, welcome back to the show, man.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So we're here to talk about the election. Here to talk about the election. Let's get
to
it.
Yeah.
So I had a question.
Yeah.
So now that the election is over, what are some strategies that President Obama will have to use to steer clear of the financial cliff?
Well, he has to hammer home his proposal, and he has to use the bully pulpit to make sure that the public knows who is being obstreperous and who is obstructing the possibility of coming to some kind of a solution to solve a problem that we obviously have had for years. So he needs to address these things to the public, explain it to us over and over again. Repetition is the mother of wisdom. You can't just say it once and assume that people know. No. You got every time you say, this is what I proposed, this is what they objected to. You got to do that. Hit them hard. Nothing to lose now. Second term, who cares? You got to hit them hard now.
Very good, very good. I'm going to throw a hypothetical out there.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a Republican strategist, how would you advise potential Republican candidates to run for president in 2016?
I would move far more to the middle and forget the extreme right nonsense, and I'd be willing to compromise on such essential issues as taxes, as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, etc. Okay? In other words, their attempt to undo all of that is bullshit and will lead to disaster, simple as it is. You need to be willing to compromise. If you're not, then we're all going to suffer the consequences. And they need to be reminded of the fact who sent them there. And we need to make sure that in 2 years from now, we get people in there, into the House of Representatives, that are willing to make deals, not ideologues. We don't need ideologues. Ideologues have been a disaster to every country throughout history, period, out gone. A disaster.
Indeed, indeed. So why hasn't Obama been able to shake himself from so much criticism about the Benghazi attacks?
To be honest with you, I think they're making a mountain out of a molehill in order to grasp at straws, to criticize the administration. But we honestly don't quite know whether Ambassador Rice was informed correctly by the security services and by the State Department. We don't know that. I don't know that. It's one of those stupid oversights. Why they wouldn't have admitted right from the first get-go that terrorists were involved, that had nothing to do with the spontaneous reaction to that stupid film, but that terrorists were involved, I don't understand why that was obscured, why that was not talked about. I don't get it. But who the hell knows?
Interesting. So going back to the actual campaign, what do you make of Obama's first debate performance?
Lousy. Absolutely lousy. And I'm sure that deep in his gut, he feels it is useless because what do these debates really show? mean, they're talking about, you know, who had what expression on his face, and this is all bullshit. It's nonsense. It is such a waste of time. It's a waste of time and money. In other words, all of that stuff had been discussed. All of it had been discussed. Okay? And we saw that Romney changed his mind a number of times. I'm sure that man is basically not a bad guy. I'm sure he tends towards the middle of the road. But in order to be nominated in the first place, he had to veer to the right. And then he tried to sort of, you know, switch back and then become a little bit more agreeable to what one would consider the middle. It was utterly boring. It is the most egregious waste of money I've ever seen. It's obscene. Now that the Supreme Court allowed unfettered sums to come into both campaigns, it is unconscionable. And I personally think that a fixed amount should be given to both candidates, and they should debate not only for a certain amount of time, but they should debate once or twice for a longer period of time and get those damn moderators out of there. I don't want them to constantly who are those pricks to constantly sit there and then interrupt these people. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
Let those two go at each other.
Right.
Let them go at each other. I want to hear what's going on. I'm not interested whether someone had a smirk on his face or not. Who gives a damn? Meaningless.
Right.
Okay, discuss the fucking substance. Excuse me.
Yeah.
What else do you want to know, William?
Why do you think some Republicans took Romney's loss so hard?
Because they were so certain that they were winning. You know, and I mean, Karl Rove and all those guys were absolutely certain that all the money they had spent, unconscionable sums of money, were assuring them of winning. So no one likes to lose. I understand that.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you think about this all this demagoguery out there? I mean, that it seems to be at a fever pitch. I mean, is it worse than you think it's been in the past?
It is worse because it's becoming, well, sometimes in the past, I remember during the Goldwater years, it was pretty bad for a while, when the Republican Party had to decide whether to ally itself with the John Birchers or not, and they were wise enough to stay away from that. But it has happened before. It is inevitable. In other words, obviously, it represents a kaleidoscope of opinions, extremes on both sides, you know. But who the hell wants to lose? No one likes
right.
to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate losing myself. Everybody hates to lose.
Of course.
So now, do you think that Romney spent too much time talking about social issues, getting sidetracked on that?
Listen, social issues are so utterly irrelevant. It's not even worth talking about. It's a waste of time. And until the Republican Party gets away from that, I think they will continue losing. I mean, what? You're now beginning to abrogate women's rights? I mean, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard of. It's nonsense. It's a waste of time. Let's discuss real issues. And the real issues are, what do we do with social services? What do we do with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, defense budget? What do we do with the wars started by, you know, someone else? How do we extricate ourselves from that? Those are important issues.
Absolutely.
The other stuff I thought we had discussed ad nauseum. Of course women have a right to make their own choices. Are you kidding? Why are
Absolutely.
We still discussing that? It's a waste of time.
How could Romney have connected better with voters?
Let me say one other thing. As soon as you infuse religion into politics, you are walking down a very dangerous path. Look at what's happening in the Middle East. All these religious kooks on both sides. You kidding? They're causing a lot of these troubles. We don't need, this country has a separation of church and state. Let's not forget that. America is an example of the separation of church and state. The reason we had it, because Europe had fought interminable wars, the 30-year war, the 100-year war, over bloody religion in most cases. So when the founding fathers, they knew that. They said, we're going to have a separation of church and state. And we better start abiding by that. If we don't, we walk down a very narrow path. And it leads to xenophobia. It leads to the restriction of free thought. It does all kinds of things. It has nothing to do with governing. It should not have anything to do with that. What your belief is your own business. Nothing against churches. I have nothing against religion. But, you know, keep it to yourself. Don't infuse it into the public discourse.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, that you can get sidetracked on those issues and get away from things that are really important.
Please.
Like some of the pocketbook issues.
Those are the most important issues.
Yes. So getting back to my question, it's kind of a two-parter. How could Romney have connected better with voters, and then why did Obama do so well connecting with voters?
I now forget the very incidences that obviously. I think eventually people saw the narrowness of the rhetoric of the Republican right, and I think a lot of people are moderate, middle of the road, and they said, wait a minute, we don't buy into that. And obviously I think most people in the country see the wisdom of raising some taxes. You've got to raise some taxes, and don't call it revenues, just call it taxes, call it what it is. And when Warren Buffett pleads for raising taxes on the very wealthy, you know, that makes sense, doesn't it? To simply ideologically say and have a Grover Norquist have the power to have people swear an oath that they will not raise taxes under any circumstances, who the hell is Grover Norquist? That's outrageous. It's not an elected official. It's outrageous. I mean, let's be sensible about this. You know, it's to me, this whole argument of we want to diminish the power of government. Are you kidding me? Are people thinking this through? Are those who are voting for that to happen, don't they receive now the benefits of Medicare and Social Security, etc.? What, do you want to abandon all that? What's that all about? What, do we want hordes of unemployed and poor people who have no safety net at all running around in our cities? It's unconscionable shit that they're arguing. How can you be so unreasonable? Obviously, there is always a question of compromise. Not too much government control. And look, the essence of free enterprise is essentially Darwinian. That means the strongest will survive. That means eventually you will have a few monopolies, because the strongest ones in the economic world will do away with all the ones who are slightly weaker. So you'll have monopolies. Hence, there is a contradiction in the notion of free enterprise. We keep it free by regulating, obviously, the agglomeration of more power in fewer and fewer hands. We did that by the Sherman Antitrust Act in 1900, when we made sure that the Carnegies and the J.P. Morgans and the Rockefellers did not acquire too much power in their hands. Otherwise, America would have been run by a few families or a few companies, and that's it. So it's a question of middle of the road. I'm just tend to be middle of the road, period. It both makes sense. We need to do everything we can to encourage business. I understand that. Not to burden them with too many restrictions. But we also need to make sure that we have regulations. Imagine if we followed the dreams of those who want no government, no regulations. Let me tell you something. I came to L.A. in 1960. There were days I played competitive soccer. There were days when you couldn't breathe. And certainly couldn't breathe when you're working out. The smog was so bad. Now, do you honestly think that oil companies and car companies voluntarily would have reduced emissions? Are you kidding? What world are you living in? You're dreaming. So obviously, what do you think would have happened to our rivers? They would have been so polluted that no one could have lived near them. That was changed because of regulations. I remember when I drove through the entirety of America by Greyhound bus and drove through some beautiful areas in America. It's a beautiful country, ruined by one big billboard after the other.
Hmm.
There was in New Mexico and Colorado and Oklahoma and Wyoming in the South. I mean, I drove through the entirety of the United States by Greyhound. I saw that shit, the plethora of nothing but advertising all over the highways, ruining beautiful countrysides. Well, it was the edict of Lady Bird Johnson, who had that act of the Beautification of America Act. That changed all that. How wonderful. So don't tell me that government is bad. Who came up with that notion? We need to curtail the power of government. That is true here and there when it becomes excessive. But then create commissions that does that. And looks into if, for example, certain government regulatory agencies become too abusive,
right.
Then you have a commission that says, wait a minute, you're going too far now.
Exactly. Absolutely.
But now to totally deconstruct all that is nonsense.
Yeah, and I heard that back in Lady Bird Johnson's day, the Potomac here in D.C. was like very polluted. I mean, it was crazy.
Listen, the rivers all over the place, including the country I come from, Germany, the Rhine River was so polluted, the fish were just belly up.
Oh, man.
And that changed all because of government edicts, regulation. They said, no, you can't do that. Do you honestly think that industry is going to do that voluntarily? Of course not.
Right, right. So I see the switchboard is lighting up, and I see we have a caller.
All right.
And let me see if I can bring her in. Hopefully she has some political questions for us.
Uh-oh.
And let's see. Hey, who's on the phone?
Marjorie.
Hey, Marjorie Powell, my mom. Say hello to Eric.
Hey, Marjorie, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Oh, you've been one of my favorite stars for I don't know how long.
Well, I appreciate it, Marjorie. I appreciate that.
I watch you every day.
Now, thank you very much.
Politics, Mom, politics.
Yeah, okay.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
I know.
Don't worry about it.
Do you think you would ever run for president?
No. No. No, under no circumstances.
Oh,
I think the guys who do have a lot of courage. I admire them all. I don't care who they are. Anyone running for president has a lot of guts.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yep. I respect them. Be they Republican or Democrat. I respect anyone who is putting his neck in the noose and, you know, waiting to be criticized morning, noon, and night. That takes a tough skin to withstand all that. And then the attacks on family and everything. I mean, I have great admiration for them. And I feel, to be honest with you, I'm happy that Obama won, but I feel sorry for Romney. In that extreme contest, I mean, the exhausting path they have to walk in order to even be nominated, and then to withstand all the criticism, and you know a lot of it is bull, and it's pretty awful. I'm sure he has a very decent family. So it's hard on everyone. So I admire the people who put it all on the line.
Okay. Great.
All right, Mike.
Any more questions?
I was just wondering, how do you remember all those lines on The Young and the Restless?
Well, I fortunately have a pretty good memory, Mike.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise it would be torture.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You
all
know
right,
you make the show. I tell you.
Thank you.
You're a wonderful actor.
I appreciate it. I really do.
Okay. Thank
All right.
you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thanks, Mom.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, Eric, I had a speaking of taxes, you raised some...
Yeah, I can hardly talk.
Yeah, Eric, you had a thing about, taxes. I want to ask you, I saw something in The Economist magazine. Mm-hmm. And it was saying that, according to an editorial in there, they were saying the thing with taxes is not to punish the rich, but to raise money more efficiently and progressively. What's your take on that?
Well, I think my take on taxes, and to be honest with you, what the hell do I know? But I have thought about this for a while, and it keeps on being very seductive to think about the notion of a flat tax, and where everyone pays without exception, pays a certain amount, and I have a feeling it would be lower for everyone if we did that, if we had no loopholes. Or you have a value-added tax where you add it to consumer goods and reduce income tax that way. I don't know. This extraordinarily intricate and complex tax code is I forget how thick it is. People said it's just enormously thick. And it shouldn't be that way. There has got to be a way to reduce taxes overall, but close all loopholes, no exceptions. Mm-hmm. And then you would tax those who are the lowest rung of the income ladder. You would tax them less, perhaps. I don't know. It's the loopholes. My God Almighty, why is it possible that someone who, like Romney, for example, only pays 15%? You know, when you receive a salary, as I do, ain't no way. You got to pay, period.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally feel that there should be, but I don't know. I need to talk to a tax expert. You need to talk to two or three, because most of them are probably for one party or the other. But I would like an objective analysis of what it would be like to reduce taxes to a flat tax, no exceptions, no loopholes, no write-offs, none of that. But reduce it for everyone. I don't know whether that would bring about more income than what we have now. Because what we have now, we are now obviously supporting a lot of tax lawyers and CPAs I mean, what individual can do their own taxes anymore? It's ridiculous.
I can't. I need an accountant. I need an accountant.
Of course. Anyway.
Well, I have a couple more things.
Or a value added tax, you know. Just a thought, and obviously I'm a complete amateur when it comes to that. I don't know. Some experts would be able to inform us about that much better than I can.
Well, I'm going to throw another one at you. Healthcare. What do you think about Obamacare?
Well, Obamacare is obviously, I think, a move in the right direction, period. In other words, I think healthcare, I was born in Germany, so I talk to my relatives every so often. I've been away there now from there for about 50 years, but I talk to them, and I'm always stunned about how really well it works, notwithstanding all those guys who come out of the closet here and there and call that socialism and communism, that's bullshit. And nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that I think a nation has the responsibility to all of its citizens to make health care available to all of its citizens as painlessly as possible, and so that most people can afford it. Okay? In other words, don't vilify it.
Uh-huh.
The Canadian system, for example.
Right.
I go to Canada a lot. I talk to ordinary Canadians. I always ask them about their health care. I've not heard one yet that is critical of it. Not one.
Huh.
Yet when you hear the right wingers over here, they call it socialism.
Huh.
I don't even know what it's ridiculous. I think education, health care should be supported widely by the government, period.
I'm going to go back in the history a little bit, and then at the end of the interview, we're going to play a little game with one of your characters, a little political game. I'm going to read out some presidents' names and just give me your opinion of each.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first one, Teddy Roosevelt. What's your opinion of Teddy Roosevelt?
Well, he was quite a character, I guess. A lot of people think very highly of him. I don't know quite enough. I just know that he overcame personally some serious health problems and became a tough guy. I don't know, to be frank with you, enough about his policies to really comment on that.
You'd probably love him because, you know, he was one of the guys that was, he offered the American people a new deal. It was sort of, he kind of reined in some of the robber barons and the...
Right.
Yeah, and he did the whole thing with the, regulation, but not too much regulation. It's really fascinating how things don't really change much. Okay,
right.
Let's go to the 80s. How about Reagan? What do you think about Ronald Reagan?
Well, I have some very specific views about Ronald Reagan. I think Ronald Reagan, I gave a speech for Gorbachev and then another one for Reagan at a meeting here. Nancy Reagan had invited me to speak at a fundraiser, I think, at the Beverly Wilshire. And I'm not a Republican, but she apparently liked what I had said before. I had called him, Ronald Reagan, and Gorbachev the two most important men in the second half of the 20th century. And let me explain to you why. Without Reagan's willingness to initiate a rapprochement, in other words, engage in getting closer to one another, engage in better relations with Gorbachev, i.e. the Soviet Union, we probably would have had a Third World War by now, long time ago. And we were on the brink. And it is one of those interesting confluences in history that change history, that prevent something from happening that would have been obviously devastating. In other words, the willingness of Gorbachev to then meet with Reagan at Reykjavik and do the SALT talks, the strategic arms limitation talks, then meet with him afterwards in Geneva. I think Nancy Reagan had probably a lot to do with that. In other words, you began to humanize the relationship. And that, I think, contributed more than anything to a long-lasting peace with the Soviet Union. And it contributed directly to the reunification of Germany, and for which I am eternally grateful to Reagan and to Gorbachev. Gorbachev told me personally that after I'd given a speech for him, we sat together and we talked through his interpreter, that he was asked by the Russian marshals, they put pressure on him, to send the tanks into rebellious cities in East Germany and Czechoslovakia and Hungary, etc. And that would have obviously prompted America to say, this far and no farther. You can't do that.
Wow.
And we would have been on the brink of war. The marshals, the Russian generals had already asked Gorbachev to please give them that signal. And he didn't. And I think he knew before that the game, the competition with America, would only end badly. And
wow.
Badly for the Soviet Union. So Reagan, as far as foreign policy is concerned, I liked him very much. I truly think that he and Gorbachev were the two most important men in the second half of the 20th century. As far as domestic policies are concerned, I didn't like too much what he was, the supply-side economic stuff that Bush Sr. called voodoo economics. I just disagreed with it. But he was a decent man, and I met him once or twice. He's a big man. He's about 6'3", and strong man, I must say. So is Bush Sr., a big man.
Uh-huh.
I played tennis with him once. I was amazed how big he was. So I like Reagan, though. I liked him as a person. I disagreed with some of his domestic stuff, and I disagreed with his attempt to undo the unions in America. I mean, he once was a union member. He was president of the Screen Actors Guild.
Right, that's
and
right.
And then he was against all that for a while. And it
air
is
air traffic controllers.
It is the precisely, but it's the unions in America that really are the bulwark of the middle class.
Hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think it is stupid to try to undo their power. Now, Have some of the demands of unions been excessive? Sure. But then you deal with it on an ad hoc basis. You negotiate it. You know what they did in Germany? Very smartly. In Germany, management invited, or unions insisted, on having representatives to, or whatever, on the board of directors of German companies. And by doing so, they made workers understand what problems they had. That made workers be more reasonable in their demands. And I think in America, you still have a very outdated way of dealing with that. You need to talk to each other. We need to always talk to each other, regardless of what side of the political fence we're on. So if you have union representatives on the board of directors, and they can see what problems a company has, they would then go to their membership and say, you know, we cannot demand this and that right now. We got to be careful with it, because the company is in hot water. Do you understand? And Germany did that very cleverly, very smartly, and that is why their economy is doing well, among others. But they're not constantly disrupted by strikes and all that stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I know back in the 80s, it was like mutually assured destruction, you know, for all the nuclear warheads and the whole thing. It was almost like your movie Colossus, the Forbin Project.
The Forbin Project. But, you know, having said that, I obviously am for, the reduction of nuclear arms. I'm for that. I agree with Obama. But I do not agree with doing away with them completely. I'll tell you why. If we had not had the threat of mutually assured destruction, I assure you we would have had a Third World War a long time ago. The only thing that prevents us from doing that is because both America and Russia knew, this will eventually be helpful to no one, because we will mutually destroy each other. And so don't do away with nuclear weapons entirely. No. Reduce the arsenal, that I'm for. But do not reduce the potential to do serious damage, because that is the only reason why we have not had a Third World War. I'm totally convinced of that.
Well, yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
So let me throw out there a man who is very controversial in history from the early 70s, President Nixon. What was your take on him?
You know, Nixon got a bad rap. He was it's a very tragic figure. He was an extremely bright guy, and I tell you why I think so. First of all, I think he is the one who initiated the rapprochement with China. He is the one, not Kissinger. I think Kissinger has always taken credit for it. Nonsense. I think it was Nixon. I heard Nixon speak at the New York Economic Club. They showed that somewhere, some documentary or whatever. And this was after his presidency. I was stunned by how well-versed that man was in foreign policy. He was a fountain of knowledge, very bright, put together he was truly an intellectual in the sense that he was able to put it all together, to synthesize all those various things, had a very clear view of the world. And I think he was, you know, somewhat of a tragic figure. The Watergate thing, well, he got caught. Don't you think they all do it? And then he got caught lying about it. Well, don't they all do it? I have not had sex with this woman. Come on. You get caught with that stuff, what do? You first deny it.
Right.
They all do.
Yep.
Of course.
So,
let's not be hypocritical.
Right.
Why bring up that shit in the first place?
That's right.
How juvenile. How juvenile is that? That star guy spending all that money on trying to figure out whether, you know, he had some shenanigans going on, President Clinton. Give me a break.
Well, since you're on the subject of Clinton, go ahead and finish out Clinton, and then I have one more president I'm going to ask you about.
I have had nothing but respect for Clinton. You know, the only thing that I disagree with him about is that he opened the floodgates when he deregulated Wall Street And that is, that happened in the last 2 years under Clinton. That, I think, was a mistake. We need to regulate the financial services system, period. You know, and he and Larry Summers and Rubin were the ones who engineered this deregulation when it came to Wall Street. I think it was a mistake. Beyond that, great respect for him. Smart man. Great respect for her. Enormous respect for her. And I'm very glad that Obama is very smart on Obama's side to ask her to be the Secretary of State. She's a very smart woman. And he's a very smart guy. So what I hated during that time is how Gingrich, and I mean, I love how that guy is was playing the moral arbiter in Washington, D.C. That son of a gun. Are you kidding me? Look what he was all up to. It's such hypocrisy back there. I can't stand it. I cannot stand it. You know, when you have, anyway, let's not talk. When you have a center of power,
right,
that attracts all kinds of women, okay?
Exactly.
So, you know, stuff happens.
Right, stuff. Like Petraeus.
But you don't, of course, the poor guy, for heaven's sake. My God, you ruin the career of a man of that stature? That's sick. They all, this is all now because of modern communication.
Right.
Eisenhower had a mistress. I mean, they all did, for heaven's sake, throughout history.
Right.
And here in America. Okay? Maybe Carter didn't.
Yeah, I think in Europe, I think they're more laid back about
this. Please, you don't discuss this nonsense. It's something that is kept private, for heaven's sake.
Right.
You know, and in the case of Petraeus, you had a jealous broad who went after the other one. You know, women became very territorial. I feel very sorry about Petraeus. I really do. Great respect for him. And now the other guy's involved. Alan or whatever. No, who's it? I don't know. The other
guy. Alan, yeah, the guy that took place him in Afghanistan.
Give me a break.
All he did was just send emails. He didn't do anything.
No. Anyway, hypocrisy.
Okay.
I can't stand it.
Yeah.
Waste of time, you know?
Yeah. In the early 60s, around the time you came to the U.S., there was a guy by the name of JFK. What's your opinion of JFK?
I obviously, like everyone else, I liked him. You know, I like Eisenhower very much, to be honest with you. I have great respect for Eisenhower. Enormous respect. Enormous respect. And he, to me, represented sort of the best in America. I mean, he freed, helped free Nazi Germany. Or Germany of the Nazis, was a great general, had a certain American modesty, but yet self-assured, no show-off, West Point. I mean, he to me represents sort of, you know, something that I've always admired about America, a certain kind of casualness and yet authority, and he embodied, I think, all the values of America, West Point graduate, of German descent. Eisenhuber was his real original family's name. You know that the Germans constitute the largest ethnic group in America.
Yes, I knew that.
Until the latest census, or the census before. That may have changed now, but no one, of course, talks about that because of both world wars.
Right.
Germans have contributed enormously to the success of America. Enormously. And no one talks about that.
That's
because
right.
of both world wars. Yeah.
Hmm.
That Hitler son of a bitch, he did more damage to Germany's image than obviously anyone ever in the history.
That's right.
So that's my view on that. Who else you want to talk about?
Okay, so let's just play
Kennedy. I listen. Kennedy is obviously I admired him. I think he made a stupid mistake when he didn't, but his father did. I think when he went to Giancana in Chicago and asked him to help his son win elections.
Yeah.
And Robert didn't know about that, I don't think, nor did Jack. And then Robert, later on, as Attorney General, goes after the mafia. Well, not a smart thing to do. And I think that caused a lot of problems that we are not even totally aware of. But Kennedy represented, again, a very bright spot in American history, certainly as it was perceived from the outside. But, you know, who was more effective, really, in bringing about enormous changes in this country, certainly in regard to civil rights, was LBJ.
That's right, you know, yeah, absolutely.
Of course, we forget that.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he put through the Voting Rights Act and all that stuff. Now, that was started, though, I think. The impetus was given already by JFK, but let's not forget for one moment that it was LBJ who made all that happen afterwards. So, great respect for him in that regard.
Who's your favorite president?
Oh, boy. Well, I think that when you think of the legacy of FDR, you know, incredible what he accomplished. Incredible. I also like to go back to the early presidents, the founding fathers, and afterwards the Adams and Jefferson and those people. They were extremely well-read, bright people who, I mean, think of that group of intellect and practical thinking and legal thinking to come up with a Bill of Rights, the Constitution, etc. I have such great respect for those guys. When you realize that a John Adams had to, by horseback, go from Boston or somewhere in Massachusetts all the way to Philadelphia, took him 4 weeks, sometimes in February.
Wow.
When those guys traveled to Europe to ask for money from the French, let's not forget that. You know, with the anti-French phobia in this country, I always laugh. I say, without the French, without their financial help, we might not have won the Revolutionary War. Let's not forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin Franklin lived in Paris for a long time. He was a curiosity. They loved him over there. Very bright man, obviously. Then John Adams came. And I think I'm at work here, so you're hearing the monitor background.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so it's those guys, the confluence of intellect in American history, the founding of it, is just extraordinary. The confluence of intellect and practical thinking. I mean, the Madisons, the Jeffersons, the Adamses, on and on. Washington at the beginning. I have great respect for these people. Enormous respect. And they took the best of what there was in European political thought of the time, and they incorporated it. And they saw to it that there was a separation of church and state. Hello?
Yeah.
People remember that and read that stuff.
We've got about 2 minutes. I got one more question, and we'll wrap up. The fictional character you played, Charles Forbin, would he have made a good politician?
No, I don't think so. He was a scientist, you know, and that film was ahead of its time. No, I don't think so. I don't think scientists make good politicians. You know, there's an art to the give and take.
Yeah.
And not many people have it.
Yeah.
Business people don't have that. Business people don't necessarily have that. The art of the give and take. A business tycoon says this is the way it goes. You follow my plan or else you're out.
Right.
You can't do that in politics. You have to be able to give and take. You know?
That's right.
Politics, Eric, is an art.
That's right, man. That's right. Eric, man, it was a pleasure talking with you again. Always a pleasure. You're very knowledgeable. It's just fantastic just to hear you just expound on these difficult topics, man. I really thank you again for coming on the show.
Thank you, William. I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed answering your questions.
All right, man.
These are things that interest me a lot. Next time, we'll talk about sports.
Okay, man.
All right, William.
Thank you so much, and have a great holiday, man.
You be cool.
Okay, I will.
All right, bye-bye. All right, bye.
All right. And I just want to tell all my listeners out there to do something for your career every day and break a leg. Night.